How many know that hallelujah is the highest praise? Can I get some feedback in here? How many know that hallelujah is the highest praise?
We really have to take this seriously. Rule zero of investing. If you cannot pronounce the cryptocurrency, the stock, bond, or whatever you're trying to invest, that means you don't know enough. Let's take a step back for a second and realize that if there's a lot of money to be made and you're just getting wind of it, especially if you're getting wind of it through the news, odds are that gravy train is already... that gravy train has already left the station. Yeah, let's do that. That gravy train has already left the station. It's not doggy coin. Nor is it a good idea to buy something just because you can afford it. I learned that the hard way because of the issue that I've been having with my freaking iPad case. Right? I bought a Logitech Folio Pro, and for some reason or another, there's a glitch to where the A button doesn't work, the F button doesn't work, the number one doesn't work, la, 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 you know. And randomly, you know, met up with somebody who has the Apple keyboard. And I'm like, oh, yeah, the Apple keyboard. And you know what? Let me see if I can get a good deal out of this. Which it was a good deal, but it lacked a lot of the features that the Folio Pro keyboard had, so I essentially got a great deal but still wasted my money. And I can definitely say that that is going to be a very, very similar outcome to investing in something you don't know about, specifically Dogecoin. Just because it's 8 cents or 5 cents or 4 cents does not mean you should invest until you know what's going on with that coin. This last week has seen a lot of amateur investors, which is incredibly exciting. We have the people versus the system when it comes to the financial sector. And I've never seen Reddit on the news more than I've seen it in the last 4 or 5 days, really. Like, there's got to be a million more subscribers, at least. If I'm not mistaken, I saw the Wall Street Bets subreddit jump from like 2.4 million to 5.2 million or something wild like that. And there's constantly at least 400 to half a million people on whenever I've checked. It's a great, great it's a great reason to be really excited about investing, but definitely pump the brakes before you buy into GameStop, before you buy into BlackBerry, before you buy into all of these. Please, please just do a little bit more research. It's definitely been a crazy week. On the news, it's been a crazy week everywhere, everywhere. It's been just such a wild time. And for us to be going into Black History Month with everything that's going on is just a continuation, I think, of 2020. I don't think 2020 has ended yet. And it's funny to see the people kind of rise up, push against a lot of the status quo. I think these are the signs of the end times. I don't necessarily think that hellfire and brimstone is upon us, but a real renegotiation is happening on a cultural level. Those that have had for a long time, and those that haven't are realizing that there is power in looking to invest in each other, invest together. I think that's super powerful, and that's what this Wall Street Bets system has been about, or issue, or scandal, or fight. For those of you that may not know what is going on or may not know what shorting a stock is, by now I'm happy to invest in you by providing this information. So as I understand it to be, if a hedge fund is looking to make some money, you can make money when a stock goes up and you can make money when a stock drops. So let's say you bought a stock at $1 and you're banking on this stock dropping. So you buy the stock and you immediately, I guess you can borrow a stock. Yeah, you borrow a stock and then immediately sell it. So you borrow a stock for $1 and you immediately sell that stock for $1. Now, if you're banking on that stock dropping in price, you wait for it to drop to 80 cents, 50 cents, whatever. You buy it at 50 cents. You give the stock back to the person that you borrowed it from. And you're making a 50 cent profit since you borrowed it at $1 and you're giving it back at 50 cents, right? So what hedge funds do is they bet against a stock portfolio, a stock company. And GameStop has been one of those companies. GameStop has not been making a lot of money for a long time, and they are on their way out. It's very, very similar to Blockbuster. Well, what a group of people have done, especially on a group of people on Wall Street Bets, and is over the last couple of years, they've been keeping their eyes on GameStop. GameStop has been super cheap, and I guess they found out that there's a hedge fund that is shorting, betting against GameStop. So what those people decided to do is buy up all the GameStop stocks. And what buying that stock did was create a demand, and that demand shot the price up. So if I bought the stock at $1 and I'm looking to wait for it to be 80 cents or 50 cents so I can buy the stock back, but then all of a sudden the stock is at $20, then damn, now I have to spend $20 to give back the stock that I borrowed at $1, which is a huge loss. Now imagine doing that to a stock that was worth $2, but is now worth $300. And that's what happened. A hedge fund lost something like, I think, $8 billion in this short. And I'm not sure if they got bailed out or not, but it was a group of people that decided to do something that didn't look worth it at all. It didn't look like a wise investment or something that would have been advised to do. But what that did was really punish that hedge fund. And now we're seeing the power in numbers. Never before have we had the stock market with social media. So now you're able to get more than just 10, 20,000 people. You're getting quite a number of people to buy into something, and that moves the market, which is extremely novel. This is something that hasn't been done before, and this is the people realizing their power. The issue with Reddit is it's too much of a popular platform to know whether you're listening to shills or you're listening to somebody who genuinely wants to give it to the system, right? To give it to the financial system as it has been. So these are unprecedented times, and it is a very, very interesting development. Now, one of the amateur investment apps, Robinhood, actually stopped people from buying up that GameStop stock, as well as a couple of other stocks that people from Wall Street Bets were interested in trying to push up, BlackBerry, Nokia, AMC. And this presented a huge problem because there was no reason for that, according to the people, there was no reason for that block to be made outside of, you know, hedge funds or whoever kind of getting at Robin Hood and saying, "Yo, this ain't what we're here for. We need you to kind of cut these people's lifeline to access this. We're trying to mitigate our losses," and that created a huge issue because people weren't able to do exactly what the app was designed to do, and there was no reason. There was no reason for that not to happen. Now, I've read in a couple of articles that because Robinhood couldn't cover at least 25% of the stocks, that is, you know, if everyone cashed out on their stocks or something like that, at the same time, Robinhood would have gone under. But I think Robinhood, similar to banks, needed to be able to have enough money to cover at least 25% of the stocks or... 25%, and they couldn't do that, so they stopped. They halted all buying. You could have sold your stocks, but they definitely didn't let you buy any of those stocks again. And that created an issue because, again, it felt like it was something, it didn't stop hedge funds from being able to buy those stocks or anybody else that was operating outside of that app. And what it really did was hinder the abilities of the commercial investors or like retail investors. And the everyday person that's looking to invest is called a retail investor. So this really screwed retail investors' ability to invest in a stock that they wanted to. And there didn't seem to be an accurate reason as to why this so stopped. And for a couple of days, Robinhood has been under fire. And so a lot of people jumped ship. A lot of people felt like they were betrayed. And what a development. So I've definitely been keeping an eye on this story and on investing, period, because at the end of the day, we definitely have to start planning for our futures. We just don't know what that future is looking like. Today feels like, or this week feels like, that old way of doing things may not last. There's going to be a lot of renegotiations. And how will this affect somebody who's investing? Now, cryptocurrency is interesting because that has taught me that we are losing money by keeping our money inactive in a bank account. So inflation is rising so rapidly that if your money is sitting in a bank account and it's not being invested somewhere, you are losing out. Basically, what $30 will buy today is not necessarily what $30 will buy 6 months from now, a year or two from now, 3 years from now. And so having that money sitting there, your money is depreciating if it's just sitting in your savings account. And yeah, there is interest, but that interest does not match the inflation rate. So in actuality, if the interest you're building is 0.8% or 1% or something like that, I think inflation is something like 2.5% or 3%. And so it is losing value much more than you're gaining money back by keeping your money in a savings account. And at the end of the day, banks are using that money that's in your savings account and they are letting someone else borrow that money, essentially making money off the money that you have sitting in your account. And they're quote unquote paying you, but they're paying you pennies. You're getting a couple of pennies a month or a year while they're able to charge somebody, you know, 15%, 20% APR on the money that they've borrowed. So just looking at cryptocurrency, this is a way for your money not to lose its value. And I think what the news and what a lot of amateur investors are doing is we're trying to flip Bitcoin the same way people have been trying to flip stocks. And I don't necessarily think that is going to end well, simply because Bitcoin and any of these other cryptocurrencies are meant to be held for as long as possible, right? So somebody that had 10,000 Bitcoin, you know, 10 years ago could essentially be good for the rest of their life, right? There's a story about someone who bought Domino's Pizza or Pizza Hut Pizza or something like that with like 27,000 Bitcoin, you know, maybe 10 years or 15 years ago. And that person's probably shooting themselves in the foot now because who knew, right? Who knew that would take off the way it did? So cryptocurrency is a great idea. It's a great idea to invest, but it isn't something that's a long game.
That's a long play. That's something that you're going to hold for a long time, kind of like Apple stocks or Walmart, Home Depot stocks, whatever, you know, is more expensive but has a steady incline in value. And this is such an interesting game because hedge funds are what a lot of pensions are, like pension funds. These are the kinds of organizations that a hedge fund might be attractive to. So let's say somebody is investing in, let's say, like a Portland Public Schools. The pension fund wants to be able to appreciate their money, so they go to a hedge fund and they say, hey, you know what, we want this amount of money to grow by this amount in the next, you know, 10 years or something like that. And that hedge fund says, hey, you know what, we can do that for you. You know, look at our track record, look at the research, and there's going to be minimal volatility and you're going to have a steady appreciation for what you invest. And these are the companies, these are the organizations that are potentially losing out or potentially at great risk of the people kind of destabilizing the financial system as it stands. So we are in a very, very interesting time. And while we're talking about that, I think I wanted to kind of bring to light the fact that there actually is like a spiritual aspect to this, right? To me, there seems to be something to where, how are we learning? What are we learning from these situations? We are learning that we're mad as hell, that hedge funds and other people have been making money hand over fist when it comes to the market. And they've been really playing towards the ignorance of the people. And not just the ignorance, but the uncollected people, you know what I mean? The people that I haven't been able to use to move as a block or as a unit, besides, like I say, pension funds and organizations like that. But this is a great example of just a bunch of retail investors. There's no kind of common denominator besides the subreddit or, you know, whoever they follow together. But this is an opportunity for people to come together and say, we want to make money on our own. And now that that's happening and now that that's possible, there needs to be a reorganization when it comes to the financial district or the situation. So I'm looking to see how this gets played out, and hopefully we can do this again, because if, you know, 100,000 people can invest in a coin or in a stock at the same time and kind of mess up the algorithms the exact same way these hedge funds are doing, then we're in for a wild year, month, you know. This is just going to accelerate the dissemination, in my opinion, it's going to accelerate the deconstruction of the middle class. You're either going to have it or you're really not going to have it. And I'm reminded that I think that America considers the middle class anyone that makes $400,000 or more in the household. So needless to say, that ain't affecting me anytime soon. But I do look forward to the time where the long plays do work out in my favor. And being in the Wild West of cryptocurrency, it could go very many ways. And so investing in something that many of us are new to, but we are insanely interested, because not only that quick money is possible, but that long money, right? Being able to really plan for the next 10 years, 15, 20 years, and have that slow appreciation and value of whatever you've invested in, simply because having your money in a bank account no longer serves the people. And maybe it hasn't for a long time. I wanted to combine this with a little aspect of spirituality, because I think that there's a valuable lesson in the collective, conscious or unconscious, right? I think that we are reevaluating what we've been taught as a culture in America specifically, how this is supposed to work versus how it's been working so far, and what our power is. And how we can learn, remember, recollect the power of the universal laws. And one of the laws in particularly is, you know, the law of attraction, but not so much in the close your eyes and imagine the world that you want to live in and no violence is possible and racism doesn't exist, or and if it does, just make sure you turn your gaze away from it because whatever you focus on expands, blah, blah, blah. I'm not so much talking about that, but I'm talking about being able to, as a culture, unlearn what we've been given so that we can explore our potentials. I think that there are so many instances where we don't even think certain things are possible simply because we come from generations of people that told us, don't even look in that direction because that isn't something that you can do. And this is an opportunity for us to say, nah, I don't believe in that. I'm not capitulating towards whatever those rules are. I think that I can do this, and I'm making a grand gesture to be able to go against what we think is possible. And I think that is exactly where miracles happen. When we were younger, when I particularly was younger, I think that the power of attraction was especially strong with me, but I didn't really have any words for it, right? I only knew that whenever I did something, and maybe it was something that was that I may not have been proud of, something that created a little bit of guilt in my mind, or something that didn't, something that was incongruous with the person that I wanted to show that I was, or the person that I wanted to be, and I felt really bad about it. And I just knew if I took that Snickers bar, if I took those couple of dollars out of my mother's purse, if I didn't return something that I knew didn't belong to me, I was gonna get punished for that. But I think the punishment didn't necessarily come from, you know, karma or the universe balancing itself because of whatever faux pas or sin that I committed. But instead, I think I attracted that punishment. I deeply, deeply do. I really believe because of the guilt, because of my confidence that whatever I did was going to result in negative action towards me, I manifested that negative action because I focused on it. I couldn't enjoy the Snickers bar that I bought with the money that I took out of my mother's purse because I knew that around some corner or eventually, it wasn't even that she was going to necessarily find out about it, but I knew that there was something negative that was going to happen to me. And it did. More times than not, I remember feeling guilty about some of the things that I did. And within a very short time, I linked something that negatively impacted me, I linked that to the action or a decision that I made that was incongruous with the, you know, positive being that I was. And as I got older, I learned that it was my fault, right? Because you look at certain people who do things that are negative, that negatively impact others, and they've been able to do these things for a long time. And it doesn't feel like they got punished. And I think that that is part of that spiritual aspect of not attracting that negativity towards you, right? I believe personally in a divine force, but that divine force is very neutral. That divine force is like gravity. And it affects everybody the same way. Everybody has the ability to interact with it. And unlike gravity, we have a lot more control over it than we give ourselves credit for. When you're a child, before you learn language, before you learn to look to adults for guidance in this world, I think that you're an unlimited source of potential. Whatever you imagine, whenever you're playing out in the dirt, whatever those two chopsticks turn into in your hands, that is something that you create, you are, right? You are playing with, you know, those two really live action characters from whatever video game, even though they just may be two popsicle sticks or two chopsticks or whatever, whatever. So that, I think, is extremely powerful. And only when you grow older do you understand that your mind or your ability to be that infinite potential is diminished because you want to be a part of the community, because you want to make your parents happy, because you want to interact with people and show them that, hey, you have ideas too. And being able to learn the language that the adults speak will give you more autonomy over your life, will give you a voice that others will have to capitulate to in one form or the other, and no longer is crying or yelling or tantrums effective. And in that learning, I think that this feels the same when it comes to, in that learning, you undo a lot of the things that could make you successful later on in life. I truly, truly believe this. Holding on to that childish view of the world and of your potential is so powerful. And unfortunately, we have generations of people. And of course, we have dangers and things that little kids should not be doing that create this this box of limitations. So yeah, that child that's walking on the rails, that is, you know, on the fifth floor and they want to climb this and the third, that is extremely dangerous. And we shouldn't just let a child enact their imaginations to be able to do this and the third. It is very, very dangerous and very foolish to be able to give that child that kind of freedom and autonomy. But at the same time, really be careful about how we limit that child's imagination, how we limit their understanding of the world, and how we kind of box in that infinite potential. Boxing in that infinite potential is something that we grow up with. And one of the examples, I think, is success, right? You know, fast forward through school, middle school, high school, whatever, college, if you do decide to do that. And success is labeled, and you know exactly what success is, and your parents tell you that, and your parents, what do? They confirm what society tells you success is. And when you understand a model or an image of success in a certain way, then anything outside of that or any deviation from that success will not equal success. And I think that this comes to us at great detriment. It's like those that came before us told us how to live our lives. And I'm talking generations before us. So if you're not making X amount of dollars, if you're not married, if you're not a homeowner, if you don't have property, if you're not, you know, saving on taxes by doing this and the third, that does not equal success. And I'm not going to say that that equals failure, but we definitely know that that does not equal success. And it's funny because when you go to philosophers, when you go to psychiatrists, psychotherapists, and ask them what a function of or what success could be defined as, it'll be either extremely broad or you'll get varying degrees of answers or varying answers, period. But most people will decide that failure is but one thing, and that's the inability to achieve your goals. Your goals. And I think that our goals have been hijacked so that we don't have any potential goals for ourselves. We don't have any Wright brothers who are learning how to fly. We don't have much innovation when it comes to just like the infinite potential of the imagination to create something that has never been seen before as a culture, as a society. And it's because there have been generations and generations of people to kind of box us in and let us know that this is the world in which success can be achieved, and this is exactly how to achieve that success. That doesn't work for me. That makes me upset because of how, in the same way, investing is a game that we're not supposed to know how to play. These are things that have been going on for so long that we're playing catch up now as the common people. And that doesn't feel fun. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel fun knowing that this person has had a couple of hundred years, a couple of, you know, a dozen generations head start in this game or in that game to be able to, and this is the game that you expect me to function in. Yeah, it's like billions of people that came before you determined how your life will grow. And my question, and what this Occupy Wall Street, no, but what this investment scenario presents to me is we're breaking that chain. We're breaking that, we're derailing that train, because the status quo is what we're attacking. We're not attacking financial institutions. We're not attacking money in its own right. But we're becoming our own selves again. We're taking this power back, and we're exercising creativity. And I think that having a resurgence of that, having a resurgence of being able to play these same games, do it in the way that the system wants us to do it, but tweaking here and there, i.e. using the internet to invest together, is unprecedented, and that is very dangerous for the system. We never wanted to read about geniuses in history. I take that back. Of course we want to know about the Wright brothers. Of course we want to know about Nikola Tesla. Of course we want to know about Madam C.J. Walker and all these other people who have really revolutionized the way that we've been living over the last couple of centuries. But now we're at a place where we want to be a part of that group in one way or the other. And it doesn't have to be personal genius. We don't have to have an Elon Musk, if that's what you're going to call him. We don't have to have a Kanye West. Instead, the collective is going to be responsible for genius moves, right? This Wall Street Bets subreddit is amazing, because I don't think, even though there may be a couple of people that are responsible for the idea of GameStop or investing in GameStop or investing collectively in a large scale, there isn't one leader of this situation. There doesn't seem to be. So not one person is attributed to this genius move. It's really a move by the collective, and that's something that won't be forgotten anytime soon. And this is going to mark a very, very significant moment in history when it comes to America and the financial system we know as the stock exchange, the stock market, and just investing in something that isn't tangible just yet. I'm definitely understanding that there is an aspect of spiritual growth that is possible when it comes to this conversation, and we're not looking at that. Right now, we're basically looking in the rear view if you're watching television or if you're reading all these articles in regards to this move. You are living in the past, and this move has already been made. These ideas are already out there, and instead of looking towards the past and looking towards what's happened, let us get engaged in the conversation. Let us get engaged in the act of investing together, and let's see where we can take this. I don't necessarily trust to invest in everything that the Wall Street Bets subreddit is saying to invest in, simply because I don't trust the masses, I guess, in whatever aspect it is. If I'm knowing about it, and especially if the news has gotten hold of it or something has already blown up, to me, odds are that that opportunity is already passed. So it's about getting in on the next wave, getting in, or just creating a small wave, a ripple in your own community. Get with 50 people, get with 100 people, and see how you can move the needle for your own particular group. And in moving that needle, we have to take this again from a spiritual aspect. We have to understand that the mission in our incarnation isn't about not working when you're 65, or not working or trying to retire when you're 40, or trying to amass wealth or trying to create generational wealth. It's really about spiritual development. That's what we're here to do, and that's how we incarnate in this world, on this realm, whatever you want to call it. And without getting too existential or hippy-dippy about life, about existence, let's just take a step back and understand that this is a moment, and Corona has presented that to us as well. This is a moment to reevaluate our lives. This is a moment to reevaluate the status quo and to decide what is valuable to us. What do we want to spend our time doing? Who do we want to spend our time with? And how do we want to make this time valuable to us? And honestly, I think that this is we incarnate here because Earth is a training ground for us. We put ourselves in these situations and we either miss or are product or are beneficiaries of certain things that happen in the world and how we can move and use those for our personal development. I think that my own personal theory about life is you think about like Roller Coaster Tycoon or any of those games that you can create your own world, your own theme park, right? So let's say you can create a theme park. Let's say you have an unlimited budget. Whatever you can imagine can be done. Anti-gravity. What was that Rick and Morty episode where people, you know, they don't die within the bubble and things like that. So let's say you have, any of those are possible. You have all these different tools at your disposal to create exactly the world that you want to live in, right? Create the theme park that is going to be incredible. Now, this is only particular. This is your taste. A theme park that you, that particularly you would find extreme enjoyment in, right? So you put all of the concession stands exactly where you would like them to be. You have the scariest rides next to the most thrilling rides, next to the kiddie rides. Like however you want to create this theme park is at your sole discretion. So you create the theme park. It's however long, however big. So who would be the person to enjoy that theme park most? The theme park that you create, the theme park that you put your ideas and imagination and personal style and flair into, who would that theme park benefit most? I would think it would be you, the particular person that created that theme park. But how fun would it be to walk through a theme park when you know everything that's happening or that will happen, right? How fun would it be when you start looking at how you can change the theme park, instead of enjoying it for what it is, right? We start critiquing things because we want to improve them, we want to make them better and all these different things. So in actuality, when you're on that roller coaster and you're doing the 360, or if you're, you know, you're riding it upside down and you fall out only to be, you know, scooped up again on the bottom half of the ride, all of these things won't be nearly as enjoyable because you kind of see it coming. You already see it happening. So what if you could forget that before you incarnate? Before you get into that, before you pay your ticket, or as you pay your ticket, as soon as you walk into that theme park, you forget that it's you that created that theme park. I think that that is essentially how life works when it comes to why we're here and what we're doing. I think we create these theme parks. I think we choose exactly how we're going to be here, but then we forget. And it's almost like you choose a level because you want to learn certain things. So learning to love yourself, right? Maybe you create a theme park where you are a black man in America. What if you create a theme park where you are a woman in a Muslim country, right? These are theme parks where there's a lot of violence, there's a lot of sadness, there's a lot of potential for dread. But the act of learning is the, what you learn through that theme park is the ultimate goal, right? So we don't look at all the actions that are taken within the theme park or all the, you know, whatever is inside the theme park, but the ultimate goal is why we're here. So if self-love or self-acceptance as you are is the goal of that theme park, then maybe that is exactly how maybe that theme park is designed to create the end goal. And maybe you have to go through that theme park more than once to create, to remember that you are the architect, or to be able to learn that valuable lesson. Who's to say that, you know, just one time through is enough for you to do that? So personally, I think that that is an adaptable way of seeing the world that I can get by. I can get behind. Solipsism is a really interesting theory that nothing outside of you exists. And you hear that when it comes to the law of attraction a lot. You hear that when it comes to people talking about, you know, creating a reality or loving someone else as if they are your own, or loving someone else as if, you know, as you love yourself. All of these theories talk about, you know, there is nothing outside of, you know, the God mind, the one mind. Everything, if you think about a light bulb and you put like a sheet over that light bulb and then you poke holes through that sheet so that it looks like each beam of light is streaming through those holes that you're poking through. They are all coming from the same source, but they have been individuated, you know, passing through that sheet. And I think that's a way of seeing the world that doesn't drive me insane, that allows me to, while I don't understand a lot of the tragedies that happen in the world, it gives me hope that the ends justify the means. In my life, I'll likely learn the lessons of being an immigrant, being someone that was torn away from the culture that they could have been able to identify with, right? Identity is huge, especially in this day and age, of being able to move around, knowing where you've come from so you can make steps in order to grow and process and move forward through life. And in my particular situation, I have been disconnected from my past, so I don't really have a relationship with my past. My future is very much uncertain simply because I don't know where to go from here, right? And having the body that I have in the culture that I've been raised in creates a whole different culture and dynamic, and that is something that both my past cannot identify with. And due to my past not being able to give me some information as to how to move through this or you be successful in this, my future isn't laid out. My future isn't determined. It doesn't feel like it, at least. There are a lot of options that I can take. There's a lot of lessons that I'll have to learn the hard way, most likely. But there is going to be a novel way of creating a new path for somebody who might come behind me, you know, who might incarnate in the same scenario and try to maneuver and get to the end goal of, what is it, self-love, self-acceptance, individuation, whatever that goal could be. This could be an opportunity for me to create systems for somebody else to find success or know that they are not alone. I think of the movie Lady in the Water, which is probably one of my favorite movies by M. Night Shyamalan. And though it's a slow movie, it's about it's based on a lullaby that he used to read to his children or something like that. In that book, there's somebody that's great, but their greatness is in the fact that they will inspire the next generation to make radical changes in the culture of that community. So while that person won't be alive or there to see it, their work sparks the mind of somebody who will make lasting change within that culture and community. I think that's beautiful. I also think that being able to spark a mind and create novel ideas is a way to break away from that old guard, from that old way of interacting with the world that can create something very new, right? So the weaknesses, let's say, you know, the way planking has always been, I think, something that is a very essential for conditioning, right? Having been able to hold a plank for a couple of minutes really, really shows that you're really exercises your core. Now, looking to be more efficient in planking, there is a Russian version of planking, which is supposed to be like 20% more efficient with the energy, as well as the skill, or I guess it's more taxing on your body, right? So if you're spending 20 minutes or an hour planking in the traditional way versus planking in the Russian variant, your results with the same amount of time will drastically be different simply because of the energy exerted. And I think being able to make that switch, being able to I don't think you're fighting against the weakness of, you know, strengthening your core, I think you're leaving that weakness behind by moving forward and progressing in these plank variations, right? So if you start using the regular planking, you'll still get away from that weakness. If you start using the Russian variant, you'll move away more quickly from that weakness, because you're not fighting the weakness. You're not trying to overcome the weakness, and you're not trying to like logic your way out of that weakness. You're simply trying to create a better version of you by more regularly doing these this exercise. And that pulls you away from that weakness. And that moves you towards power. And in that power, you value discipline, because you see that the consistent planking variation that you're doing is creating results, and you're no longer subject to the weaknesses that you were before. And I think that the mind is one of those weaknesses. The mind has definitely not been meant to lead. And it would be if we were not endowed with the ability to self-actualize. If I couldn't see myself in the mirror, if I couldn't contemplate the world that I'm in and the existence that I've had, then yeah, the mind would be an excellent master. But since I know that part of me is a miracle, right? The self-actualization, being the only known animal on this planet that has this ability, I think that that is a miracle. And knowing that miracles can happen really, really puts the mind in the back seat. Logic doesn't apply when it comes to the Wright brothers. We know that wings are necessary. We know that X, Y, and Z is necessary, but the ability for man to fly, the ability for the bumblebee to fly, defies logic, defies science, which is just an accumulation of logic over generations and generations. These things aren't meant to be the leaders of our world. These things are meant to be a tool to be used, but our infinite potential really needs to be resurrected in order to create something that is, you know, novel. I don't think it's true that there's nothing new under the sun. I think that something new can be created, and something new can be discovered, right? And I guess if it's discovered, that means it's not new. But I think that the mind isn't as useful as our society makes us think it is. It's like if you could say an airplane. An airplane, average airplanes travel, so what's that, 600 and 700 miles an hour. And I'm talking about just commercial airplanes. And, you know, 100 years ago, that was foolish to even think possible. So if we can get here now by not thinking in logical terms, and if somebody were to say now that man can move, you know, thousands of miles in a second, that sounds crazy, and that defies logic, but that doesn't mean that it's not possible, right? That leaves enough space for us to say, all right, well, if this is the end goal, how do we get to that end goal? How do we make that happen? How do we actualize that far-fetched idea? And actualizing that idea will not come with science. Actualizing that idea will not come with logic. It won't come from looking at history. It won't come from looking at what those before us have done. It'll come by observing our natural world. It'll come by divine inspiration, like penicillin, you know. If you know the story of penicillin, if you don't know the story of penicillin, I definitely think that you should look it up, because it was in a dream. Tesla dreamt up many of his inventions. Einstein dreamt up many of his inventions. These are just a way of being able to quiet the mind so that something else is able to divinely inspire. Something else takes over, at least, and provides some insight into what can be possible when we believe. And our ability to create miracles in our lives depend firmly on our ability to circumvent the collective unconscious. So that collective unconscious, I believe, is those generations of ideas and logic that have been passed down. So you know what? When you grow up, you're going to be a doctor. You're going to be an engineer, you're going to be successful if you do X, Y, and Z. But now we're looking in more into entrepreneurial endeavors. We're looking not to only do those things that our parents deemed successful, but we're doing things because we're taking our lives into our own hands. So maybe you can become a millionaire by promoting Grumpy Cat. Spectacular really blows my mind when it comes to all the things that he's done. Like I can't wait for his biopic. It doesn't make sense to me. And it's not supposed to, because it's something that is incredibly done. And I highly, highly believe, because of examples like that, that the things that I'm doing are worthwhile. I'm not looking to learn programming as quickly. I'm not ready to go back to school to get my master's in this, that, and the third, because I don't believe that that old way of success should be chased anymore. I'm really looking to believe and achieve what I want. And all those things that you want to achieve, belief is the currency, I hear. That's how you pay to get to where you want to go, by constantly believing and really being disciplined in that belief, right? Our challenges in this life would be to transcend those limitations put on us by generations that came before us. There's nothing more lonely than this endeavor, though, right? As humans, we are a collective creature, and unfortunately, those generations of logic and those generations of how to live life have really solidified into a way of creating community. And any kind of deviation from that community, any deviation from that mentality also pulls you away from that community, which feels bad. I know that in my journey of traveling, of sailing, of kind of living the life that I want to live for now in order to get where I want to go, I haven't been able to have much support in that. When it comes to family, when it comes to other people that are curious about exploring life outside of the norm, it is very uncomfortable. It is something that, unfortunately, you do have to go alone. Many of the esoteric schools of thought talk about that. If you're going to become an initiate, like if you're going to be a student of the temples in Egypt, you have to do many of those lessons alone. Even though you have a teacher or a guide or something like that, what you learn is for you to learn, and very rarely will you find help or somebody that is on the same page as you at the same time. And cultivating that understanding of the world or that aloneness, I think, gives you more access to just your five senses. I think it makes you more sensitive towards the intangible world, right? So it gives you more access beyond smell, beyond sight, beyond touch. And it could be something related to those, right? Demon Slayer is a really interesting anime that speaks about a young man that understands the value of scent and being able to use scent in all these different aspects of his world, even though he lives, you know, in the forest with his family and digs up coal to be able to sell to the villagers and make some money to be able to bring back and support his, you know, six or seven brothers and sisters. Imagine that sense pushed right to the point where, you know, I'm not going to give that storyline away, but it's an excellent story, excellent series. There's only one season, and it's a very, very, very good show. I've even noticed this in my own life, right? Me and my cousin, we haven't necessarily been like trying to meditate together. We haven't been looking to develop extra senses together. But over this last week, we have been in each other's minds more than normal, right? So something that she thinks that maybe she doesn't share, a couple of minutes later, I'll say that. And she'll go, yo, I was, you know, blah, blah, blah. So there is, you know, or she wants to go somewhere to get something and, you know, I just randomly guessed. There's no reason for me to say, hey, you know, does that place happen to be here? And it just so happened to be. So if she's like, yo, you know what? I want to go get some Jamaican beef patties. Yo, is it beef patties in Kendall? Like, yo, the place that I was thinking is in Kendall. How could you have known that? I think that these are just small examples of the ability to connect further than what we know, further than what we're taught, further than what our society deems normal or regular or the only way to do it. There is a, I guess you can call it like a miracle action plan. There are things that you can do in your life to kind of break away from what is known, what is normal, what is expected, and to create those miracles in your own life. And by miracles, I don't mean walking on water, but I just mean being able to firmly push your life in a specific direction, despite the fact that everything around you says that you shouldn't be able to do this. Or grant yourself and the ability or the patience or the income or the position or the relationship that you want. That is possible without you having to necessarily work towards those goals in the prescribed fashion that logic dictates, right? There are certain things that you will have to do. I don't think that I'm going to get a six-pack simply by willing myself to have a six-pack. But maybe I will get that position at the salary that I want because I am doing these exercises. And one of those teachers for these exercises is someone named Neville Goddard. There are plenty of teachers. I don't think that there's anyone new that is creating any information that hasn't been taught previously. But in the way, in the fashion, just in the voice, in the cadence, in the messenger, I think that message is much more succinct. I think that message is very much palpable and palatable. And in our next episode, I'll break down one of Neville's lectures and provide, I guess, a couple of steps to achieving that which you will. That's coming at the end of this week. And check out for that on Sunday. Thank you for being with me. Thank you for rocking with Small Chops Podcast. And thank you for, what else I gotta be thankful for? That's enough. As always, you can find me or get in contact with me on Instagram, effable.co, effable.co. The website as well is effable.co, where you'll find these podcasts listed. And on Twitter, effable, EFFABL. Reach out.
Sit me down and get our Bible out. 2 days straight, teach revelations to me. Fruits of the Spirit, love and patience to me. I used to wonder why she cried when she told me that nobody in this world but God could console me. The devil is lurking in the shadows, so pick your battles. Keep your eye on the sparrow and walk on the straight and narrow, cause pride and arrogance will swallow you in Pharaoh's flood. Look after your sisters, I'm here cause you in fallow blood. You never know when thick land could turn to shallow mud. And if the shit hit the fan, quicksand will lather up. Where there's no vision, the people perish. So these are the memories I keep and cherish. Sunny in the memories of laying in the grass. My head was spinning and my heart was beating fast. I opened up and started laying you my past. Una for Diva Lagrima was on the box and Merlot was in the glass. I must admit at first I focused on that ass, but then we chilled and had a blast. So the waves had to crash, but the Titans have to clash. We had a decorated badge, just forgot to pump the gas. Life is a storyboard, captured in the Polaroid. The memory's the jewel, cause the camera is cold and void. Like a corpse or C-3PO, the golden droid. Vivid flashbacks will leave you real sad or overjoyed. Where there's no vision, the people perish. So these are the memories I keep and cherish.